18th century fossil hunters. Indeed, to a surprising extent, it had only just begun. In 1898, the year that fell between the deaths of Cope and Marsh, a trove greater by far than anything found before was discovered, noticed, really, at a place called Bone Cabin Quarry, only a few miles from Marsh's prime hunting ground at Como Bluff, Wyoming. There, hundreds and hundreds of fossil bones were to be found weathering out of the hills. They were so numerous, in fact, that someone had built a cabin out of them, hence the name. In just the first two seasons, 100,000 pounds of ancient bones were excavated from the site, and tens of thousands of pounds more came in each of the half-dozen years that followed. The upshot is that by the turn of the 20th century, paleontologists had literally tons of old bones to pick over. The problem was that they still didn't have any idea how old any of these bones were. Worse, the agreed ages for the Earth couldn't comfortably support the numbers of eons and ages and epochs that the past obviously contained. If Earth were really only 20 million years old or so, as the great Lord Kelvin insisted, then whole orders of ancient creatures must have come into being and gone out again practically in the same geological instant. It just made no sense. Other scientists besides Kelvin turned their minds to the problem and came up with results that only deepened the uncertainty. Samuel Horton, a respected geologist at Trinity College in Dublin, announced an estimated age for the Earth of 2,300 million years, way beyond anything anybody else was suggesting. When this was drawn to his attention, he recalculated using the same data and put the figure at 153 million years. John Joly, also of Trinity, decided to give Edmund Halley's ocean salts idea of whirl, but his method was based on so many faulty assumptions that he was hopelessly adrift. He calculated that the Earth was 89 million years old, an age that fit neatly enough with Kelvin's assumptions, but unfortunately not with reality. Such was the confusion that by the close of the 19th century, depending on which text you consulted, you could learn that the number of years that stood between us and the dawn of complex life in the Cambrian period was 3 million, 18 million, 600 million, 794 million, or 2.4 billion, or some other number within that range. As late as 1910, one of the most respected estimates by the American George Becker put the Earth's age at perhaps as little as 55 million years. Just when matters seemed most intractably confused, along came another extraordinary figure with a novel approach. He was a bluff and brilliant New Zealand farm boy called Ernest Rutherford, and he produced pretty well irrefutable evidence that the Earth was at least many hundreds of millions of years old, probably rather more. Remarkably, his evidence was based on alchemy, natural, spontaneous, scientifically credible, and wholly non-occult, but alchemy nonetheless. Newton, it turned out, had not been so wrong after all. And exactly how that came to be is, of course, another story. 7. Elemental Matters. Chemistry, as an earnest and respectable science, is often said to date from 1661, when Robert Boyle of Oxford published The Skeptical Chemist, the first work to distinguish between chemists and alchemists, but it was a slow and often erratic transition. Into the 18th century, scholars could feel oddly comfortable in both camps, like the German Johann Becher, who produced an unexceptionable work on mineralogy called Physica Subterranea, but who also was certain that, given the right materials, he could make himself invisible. Perhaps nothing better typifies the strange and often accidental nature of chemical science in its early days than a discovery made by a German named Hennig Brandt in 1675. Brandt became convinced that gold could somehow be distilled from human urine. The similarity of color seems to have been a factor in his conclusion. He assembled 50 buckets of human urine, which he kept for months in his cellar. By various recondite processes, he converted the urine first into a noxious paste, and then into a translucent, waxy substance. None of it yielded gold, of course, but a strange and interesting thing did happen. After a time, the substance began to glow. Moreover, when exposed to air, it often spontaneously burst into flame. The commercial potential for the stuff, which soon became known as phosphorus from Greek and Latin roots meaning light-bearing, was not lost on eager business people, but the difficulties of manufacture made it too costly to exploit. An ounce of phosphorus retailed for 6 guineas, perhaps $500 in today's money, or more than gold. At first, soldiers were called on to provide the raw material, but such an arrangement was hardly conducive to industrial-scale production. In the 1750s, a Swedish chemist named Carl Scheele devised a way to manufacture phosphorus in bulk without the slop or smell of urine. It was largely because of this mastery of phosphorus that Sweden became and remains a leading producer of matches. Scheele was both an extraordinary and extraordinarily luckless fellow. A poor pharmacist with little in the way of advanced apparatus, he discovered 8 elements, chlorine, fluorine, manganese, barium, molybdenum, tungsten, nitrogen, and oxygen, and got credit for none of them. In every case, his finds were either overlooked or made it into publication after someone else had made the same discovery independently. He also discovered many useful compounds, among them ammonia, glycerin, and tannic acid, and was the first to see the commercial potential of chlorine as a bleach, all breakthroughs that made other people extremely wealthy. Scheele's one notable shortcoming was a curious insistence on tasting a little of everything he worked with, including such notoriously disagreeable substances as mercury, prussic acid, another of his discoveries, and hydrocyanic acid, a compound so famously poisonous that 150 years later, Erwin Schrödinger chose it as his toxin of choice in a famous thought experiment. Scheele's rashness eventually caught up with him. In 1786, aged just 43, he was found dead at his workbench, surrounded by an array of toxic chemicals, any one of which could have accounted for the stunned and terminal look on his face.